Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
Hell yeah! Yeah, right!
Monday, pretty good Monday for the Ole Miss baseball team, coming off a series win over previously second-ranked Louisville over the weekend. We'll talk more in-depth about that as this program wears on. Six Ole Miss Rebels done at the NFL Combine. Some very interesting storylines coming out of that. Of course, Laremy Tunsil, Laquan Treadwell, neither one running at the combine, and can't say as I blame them. Nothing to gain from that if you're sitting in their positions as the draft approaches. But Robert Kimdichie making a few headlines on Friday when he stepped in front of the NFL media for the first time, also making some headlines on Sunday with his outstanding performance in the testing events. But let's look at Friday for a little bit. One thing that Kimdichie divulged during his press conference Friday in Indianapolis was that he was not the only Ole Miss Rebel in that Atlanta hotel room that December night when he fell and or jumped from an upper floor window, causing himself to have to be transported to a hospital, causing himself to be dismissed from the Ole Miss football team before the Sugar Bowl. With Tunsil in that hotel room, with Kimdichie in that hotel room, was Laremy Tunsil. And that was breaking news, because Tunsil had not been associated with that evening whatsoever by any stretch of the imagination. And Ole Miss, the Ole Miss program, probably getting a buy right there, because had Laremy Tunsil's name been associated that evening with Robert Kimdichie, had been included in a police report or anything of that matter, wow, that would have changed the complexion of a lot of things. Would Tunsil have played in the Sugar Bowl? Would Tunsil be considered the odds-on favorite to be the number one pick in the NFL draft? Dave, a revelation that I don't think anybody was really expecting to hear. There had been some innuendo about Tunsil really ever since the middle of January, perhaps being with Kimdichie. But there was nothing that there was no fire you could see behind that smoke that was out there until Robert Kimdichie outed him on Friday. Dave, fans have had different opinions about that. Some have said that Kimdichie was wrong for implicating Tunsil in that evening. But I tell you, to me, I think the bottom line is, I think that was a test question for Robert Kimdichie. I promise you this. Those NFL scouts, agents, coaches, they knew what happened that night. Yeah, the thing you got to remember, the NFL, they have a private investigation arm in their front offices when they're about to spend millions upon millions of dollars on these players. These guys are former FBI agents, former CIA agents. They know how to dig in the dirt, so to speak. So I guarantee you the NFL execs knew Tunsil was with Robert Kimdichie that night. And I also am pretty darn sure that was a planted question, because some bodies wanted to see how Robert Kimdichie would respond to that. Would he be truthful? Would he tell a lie at the podium? Dave, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it I can see, you know, you talked about the fans having mixed feelings about it, and you're right. It could be, you know, a planned question to see how Robert would react to, you know, that type of question, and you know the honesty of it, you know, could have possibly have come out, but the ownership of the situation, you know, what Robert Kimdichie had a chance to do, I just don't see how that came through in the interview. He had an opportunity to, you know, get in front of the media, get his face and tell his story and say, look, I made a mistake, I own up to it, and, you know, I'm looking to move forward with it, you know, I don't see where he did that at any point in his interview.
I think he did. I really think he did own up to it. But at one point during his interview with the media on Friday, he blamed the media, like the media had made a mess of this, a circus of this. I don't think any media members shattered the glass and jumped out of the hotel room and had to have an ambulance called. I don't think any media members had drug possession charges slapped on them. And I think that was a bad turn right there for Robert at the microphone when he started off his career in front of the ruthless NFL media, who do you don't have a sports information director to protect your butt when you're playing in the National Football League. And it's a fair game, and they're going to ask you the hard questions. They're going to ask you questions that you don't like. And I don't think Robert hit that one out of the park. As a matter of fact, I think he swung and whiffed when he at one point alluded to the fact that it was the media that made the mess. When in fact, I think the rest of the world doesn't see it that way. Michael, it was a damned if you do, damned if you don't question presented to Kimdichie. You know, were you the only Ole Miss rebel in that hotel room? If he lies, it's a gotcha thing, because I promise you somebody knew, multiple people knew that Tunsil was in there. And if you tell the truth, then it looks like your kneecap and your teammate. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's for sort of the people that think that Robert was throwing Laramie under the bus, it looks that way, but it looks that way on the cover of it. But if – There's so much dissection that goes on during the draft time that someone knew. This wasn't a mystery. Robert wasn't revealing it to everyone. He was reaffirming it to everyone. Because they go into everyone's path. They dissect everything. We're at a point in the draft process where if a guy has a peanut allergy, it drops him around in his projected mock draft. And it's just ridiculous. And so Robert... I did not think Robert did well in the interview portion. I also did not anticipate Robert doing so well in the interview portion. But he also, I mean, you're at the point now where I've seen numerous people say character concerns associated with Laramie Tunsil, which is just absurd. I mean, you piece together the NCAA deal, which I think everyone and their mom in the NFL knows that the NCAA is a broken system. And never really faults. If they don't fault a Dez Bryant or a Justin Blackman or, you know, insert player here, A.J. Green, then they're not going to hurt Laramie for that suspension deal. And then once everything came out about him punching his stepfather, then, you know, once everyone realized what that was, that sort of went under the bus. And this is something that by the time draft time rolls around, Tennessee Titans are not going to be thinking about Laramie Tunsil in a hotel room. They're going to take Laramie Tunsil number one because they invested a lot of money and a lot of their franchise in Marcus Mariota, and he got beat up last year. And you have a franchise left tackle who's drawn comparisons to Orlando Pace, to Jonathan Ogden. You're not going to bypass him because he was partying in a hotel with Robert Kimdichie. Maybe you make him delete Robert Kimdichie's phone number out of his phone, but that's about it. So I didn't really think it was a big deal. It's not something that we'll really see carry over into the next few months. It's just sort of something that's lingering right now. But we still have a long way to go until the draft. So I think it's a big deal at the moment, but eventually it'll sort of be nothing.
Yeah, I agree with you right there. No hurt to Laramie Tunsil's stock at all. And if the Tennessee Titans ultimately decide they're going to hang on to that number one pick, then Laramie Tunsil is going to be in Nashville. And Robert Kimdichie, I'll make this prediction right now. Kimdichie's off-the-field situation is not going to be as big of an issue come draft day. And part of that is because of what he did yesterday at that combine. Robert Kimdichie measured in at 6'4" and 294 pounds. He ran a 4.87 40-yard dash time. His vertical was 35 inches. And for those of you who don't really follow those measurables as far as football goes, those are incredible for a man that size. Then he also turned in 28 reps in the 225-pound bench rep match, which is pretty darn good in itself, and a 116-inch broad jump. So he is everything he is advertised to be as far as his athleticism. Now, there were questions about his motor on Friday, whether or not he was a lazy player. And Robert used the term lazy himself several times when asked about his lack of production at Ole Miss. That's certainly got to be a concern. You want to have a motivated millionaire that you select in the first round. And if you're not motivated in college when you're trying to get to that stage, once you've got the money in the bank, how motivated will you be? And then that's when the factors of, what's this kid going to do with these millions of dollars? Will it distract him from being the best professional that he can possibly be? Those are the things that NFL executives are going through right now and trying to just wade through and determine whether or not Robert Kimdichie is worthy of going, it's the top 10 picks in the first round, which that doesn't seem like a probability now. Top 15 picks, top 20 picks, he's going in the first round. Somebody's going to take a chance on the talent and hope that he grows up and matures a little bit. Those things are going to be fun to watch. Laramie Tunsil certainly did nothing to hurt himself. Robert Kimdichie, I think overall, even when you factor in Friday's media appearance, he probably helped himself a little bit this weekend at the combine. Laquan Treadwell, I think he helped serve. He's going to be just fine unless he runs a terrible 40 at Pro Day at Ole Miss, which will be the first time he runs the 40 in front of the NFL scouts. Cody Core, turning in the seventh best 40 time amongst wide receivers, and there were about 40 of them at the NFL Combine. Fly Cooper certainly looked good, ran a good 40 time at 310 pounds. And then C.J. Johnson, I haven't heard a whole lot about C.J. C.J.'s borderline on being in the draft. There are some concerns, obviously, about his medical history and just where he fits into an NFL scheme. Those are the six you watch. Do not forget about Trey Elston. I still think Trey Elston with an outstanding pro day could be a draft pick, as well as Mike Hilton. So we'll see how they perform on pro day, which is set for March 28th at the Manning Center. Now, guys, not everything was neatly and nicely tucked away at the NFL Combine over the weekend. Chris Jones making some headlines yesterday for one of the biggest bloopers in the history of the NFL Combine. And the skin-tight spandex shorts, Michael, they may be out of fashion come next year after Jones flopped a little bit yesterday at the Combine.
Yeah, that was it's when something like this happens that you realize just how weird the Combine is. That you have all these 20, 21, 22-year-old guys wearing tight spandex, showing off how high they can jump, how fast they can run, how strong they are in front of thousands of strangers, all armed with notebooks and cameras. And it's just such a strange and creepy event that you just feel like you're in your underwear while all these strange men are looking at you and judging you on whether or not you can play football or not. And hopefully this sort of deal, I thought that the most the most embarrassing Mississippi State combine moment was going to be Vic Ballard. I mean, he was in the clubhouse with a huge lead on Sunday for a couple of years ago when he was getting off and started stumbling. And then I believe he took out the official timer when he fell down. He fell into some contraption off to the side. And if you can beat that out, and it's from the same school, that's a little rough. But luckily for our friends a little bit further south down in Starkville, everyone's talking about Chris Jones at the combine rather than what Darunya Wilson did, as that was sort of the story at Starkville for a little while there.
Yeah, Darunya Wilson certainly not with impressive numbers. Last in the 40, last in the vertical amongst wide receivers. So, yeah, definitely if there was one Mississippian that hurt himself during the combine weekend, it was Darunya Wilson, but one Mississippi player, let me say that. Chris Jones, he's kind of the cult favorite coming out of it. Dave, you've been in similar positions. What are your thoughts on Chris Jones and the flop on Sunday?
Yeah, you hate to see that for any kid.
I hated to see it. I absolutely hated to see
it. Not only is it damaging to the eyes, but it is an embarrassing moment. I mean, you have to agree. You know, you don't want to see a kid to have a embarrassing moment like Chris Jones did. No matter which team, you know, he hails from. You know, Mississippi State, or, you know, an Ole Miss prospect, you definitely would not want to see something like that and be distracting for them with their mindset and their mindset in the combine.
Well, Twitter certainly had its time with it yesterday, and it didn't take long for it to go viral. The most interesting hashtag I saw was hashtag tape it down. You know, what a showing for Chris Jones on Sunday at the NFL Combine. So spring practice right around the corner for these Ole Miss Rebels. On Wednesday, the Rebels will take the field for the first time this spring. They'll go at it about 4 o'clock Wednesday afternoon. That practice closed to the media. All practices closed to the public as far as we know this spring. I do not expect a public viewing. Ole Miss has made no mention of it whatsoever. We will get our first look at these Rebels on Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Practice open to the media. We're certainly looking forward to that. Hugh Freeze will hold his spring press conference at 1 o'clock Thursday afternoon inside the Manning Center. After Thursday, we'll get to see this team on Monday at a 4 o'clock practice, and we'll get to see them again on Friday at a 4 o'clock practice before everybody shuts everything down for spring break. Around the Ole Miss football program, some of the players will be leaving the country, going to Haiti on their annual mission trip. Others will just go their own merry way for their own spring breaks. But the Rebels looking to get in 6 practices prior to spring break. And it looks like we're going to have a little more availability as far as media goes this year. Remember last year, availability was almost nothing as there was a quarterback battle raging allegedly raging, I want to preface that because I've always said it was an alleged quarterback battle. Two of the 3 guys who were allegedly involved in that quarterback battle with Chad Kelly last spring, they're not even on the roster anymore. Take that for what it's worth. But no quarterback battle this year, at least not for the number 1 spot. The number 2 spot, though, up for grabs between redshirt freshman Jason Pellerin and true freshman early enrollee Shea Patterson. And, Michael, I'll throw it to you on that. Chad Kelly's a Heisman hopeful. He's not going to lose the grasp of the starting job for the Ole Miss Rebels. He put together one of the greatest seasons ever, if not the greatest statistic season for Ole Miss last year as a quarterback. But the number 2 spot has to be up for grabs, and neither one of those guys, Pellerin nor Patterson, have ever taken a live snap in a college football game. How do you see that playing out this spring?
It's sort of strange. You're even seeing some national media types saying that after being so impressed with Shea Patterson, saying, "Hey, Chad Kelly's job may not be safe." Chad Kelly, without question, the number 1 quarterback on the Ole Miss roster, and will stay that way.
Yep.
for the long foreseeable future for this season. But I like Pellerin a lot. There's been some accuracy concerns, but he has a strong arm, big physical kid, and as we've mentioned on here, he's brilliantly smart. He wasn't just doggedly pursued by Northwestern for just no reason. This kid is really smart on and off the field, but I foresee this being Shea's backup spot to lose. There's a spot with how if Shea Patterson plays how a lot of people are projecting him to play and how they expect him to play in his collegiate career, then he could be an early entrant into the draft. And so you don't really want to waste any development times of when you could get Shea Patterson into the game, whenever you can get him some reps in either a blowout or, you know, Chad Kelly gets a stinger or something. You want him to get into the game and get some experience. And I mean, Pellerin's a great quarterback. I just think he's in sort of a rough situation right now that I would honestly be shocked if I saw Shea Patterson in the 3 spot and Pellerin in the 2 spot. And getting Shea Patterson in early, getting him in January, that's going to help him tenfold going into the season.
You know, I think you'll see leaving spring, this is how I would predict things to go. Number one on the depth chart, obviously Chad Kelly. There is no way in the world. And you're exactly right. There have been some national media types write some stuff, put some stuff out there about, you know, is Chad Kelly's job safe? Those are click monster articles right there. They're trying to get clicks. Anybody that knows anything about this Ole Miss football program, including you, the fans, totally understand what you have in Chad Kelly is very, very special. You may have the best returning quarterback in America in Chad Kelly, and Ole Miss will go as far as Chad Kelly takes it this fall. So there's no controversy around the number one spot. Number two spot, though, Shea and Jason Pellerin, I could see leaving spring with that two being Pellerin or Patterson, number two, and that's how
I feel.
Yeah, no number three on the depth chart. The thing about Jason Pellerin and talking to some of the guys on the Ole Miss team, this is what they tell me about Jason Pellerin. Jason Pellerin is a very serious guy when it comes to football, and Jason Pellerin has a big chip on his shoulder about people doubting him and his ability to play quarterback at Ole Miss. And this is what I know about Jason Pellerin. Michael, you hit on it. Number one, he's an extremely intelligent young man, not just in the football sense, but in the general sense. Jason Pellerin is a high IQ young man. Number two is he comes across as being hungry. So that gets back to what some of these players are saying about Jason having a chip on his shoulder right there. Number three, he's an unbelievable athlete, one of the best athletes on the entire Ole Miss football team. He's 6'4", 235 pounds. He can run like a deer. He's got a cannon on his shoulder, as Michael said. Struggle a little bit with accuracy, but from what I'm being told, that's being remedied right now. And if he can get that pinpoint accuracy down that it takes to run this Ole Miss offense, anybody that's selling Jason Pellerin short on competing at the quarterback position is terribly off the mark, in my opinion. And I keep getting asked all the time, hey, when are they going to move Pellerin to tight end? When are they going to move Pellerin to linebacker? You got two other scholarship quarterbacks other than Chad Kelly on this roster. That ain't happening. You're going in to the season with 3 scholarship quarterbacks. I promise you that. And there are no more coming. What you have is what you have to go to war with. Jason Pellerin's going to stay at that quarterback position, and I personally think he's going to excel. Now, anything I've said about Pellerin by no means is designed to take any shine off Shea Patterson, who is absolutely – he enters as the best high school quarterback in America. His potential is out of this world. I've never seen Shea Patterson rattled in any situation of competition that he has ever been in. He has an assassin's mentality. So that's what makes things interesting. You've got a Heisman hopeful as a senior returning starter. You've got a kid like Jason Pellerin, whom I think was very underrated coming out of high school. And then you've got Shea Patterson, who hands down is the top 2016 quarterback in America. Quarterback situation at Ole Miss has never been deeper in terms of quality and in terms of promise. And that is a very, very good problem for Hugh Freeze to have moving forward with this program. Now, Dave, I want to ask you this. We've talked about the quarterback, but which player are you most excited about getting to watch this spring? And when I say that, I'm not talking about the vets. I'm talking about the unproven guys, the redshirt freshmen, maybe one of the early eight that's already on campus. Who are you, or maybe an upperclassman that just hasn't had that impact moment yet? Who are you looking at this spring?
Well, there are several of them that I can choose from, David. One of them that really just sticks out to mind right now is Sean Curtis. Middle linebacker from the 2015 class, redshirted last season. There was a lot of hope with Sean Curtis in that position of possibly adding quality depth. He wasn't needed last year. He was a last minute pickup in that 2015 signing class. So there wasn't really much to grasp on Curtis, and we've mentioned before, you know, he was possibly a steal of that class, very highly underrated for the simple fact he spent much of his high school career competing in basketball, so he really came in late onto those combine and camp scenes, so his exposure out came really late in the recruiting process for him. So, you know, he definitely has the size standing in.
Wait a minute. Did someone just get attacked by a lion or a tiger or something?
It wasn't on my end. Michael, are you okay over there?
Michael, are you alive?
Yeah. As some of y'all may know, I have a Tring Walker Coonhound who's about a 90-pound beagle-looking monstrosity. And there's some folks cleaning the pool at my housing complex right now, and he didn't take kindly to it.
Well, there you have it, folks. I just wanted to check on my guys. I heard that what I thought was a lion or a tiger attacking one of you guys. Of course, we're not in the same location, so I've only got sound to go by, and that didn't sound very good. But anyway, Dave, carry on. Michael's A-okay.
Well, I'm glad that everybody is safe. But yeah, going back to Curtis, though, you know, he definitely has that size to move into that pitcher at middle linebacker, but what everybody is anticipating for is to see it on the field, and we're going to get that shot this spring, hopefully, and you know that he has a lot of high expectations, in my opinion, going into the spring, because he's coming into a position, as David, as you know, is a very high and critical need and demand for some guys to step up in those middle and outside linebacker positions.
My guy is DeMarcus Lodge, and it's still a little head scratching as to DeMarcus playing and catching a touchdown pass against Tennessee Martin last year, and then he pretty much dried up in terms of rotation in the receiver corps after that, and burn a year. So he's coming in as a sophomore, but this is his first spring practice. And, you know, you go back and watch his high school film, such a lethal red zone weapon. His ability to high point the football and things of what he can do on a short field makes him Treadwell-like a little bit in that regard. And I can't wait to see what he does this spring catching balls from Chad Kelly. Michael, what about you? What one guy are you excited about seeing this spring?
Well, I've been thinking about that, and a couple guys come to mind, from Ross Donnelly to Alex Givens to Armani Linton. There's a lot of different players to choose from there, but I've got to go with C.J. Hampton. C.J. Hampton is a guy who came in, you know, with a lot of accolades, was a very very interesting recruitment, with Nick Saban really, really pursuing after C.J. Hampton, wanting him in the worst way, which is as high of a compliment as you can get as a defensive back, is Nick Saban wanting you. And in sort of he hasn't really materialized as sort of the player that you expected coming in, which, you know, some guys it takes a couple of years. You saw Channing Ward left a little to be desired the first couple of years, and by the time he left Ole Miss, he was a monster in 2015. And C.J. Hampton, the training wheels are off. He has his spot, and but he really needs to step up this year in the back end of that secondary, which loses, you know, leaders like Chief Brown and Mike Hilton. And there's a lot to Trey Elston. There's a lot to be replaced back there, and a lot's going to be asked of C.J. Hampton. And you want to see that sort of jump from sophomore to junior year for Hampton. And I'll be really interested to see that because, Lord knows, Ole Miss is going to need him on that back end.
Yeah, definitely so. And you've just kind of been waiting and waiting and waiting for C.J. Hampton to arrive. And, you know, you mentioned his recruitment, such a hotly contested recruitment between Ole Miss and Alabama. Such a celebratory moment for Ole Miss when C.J. committed for the second time to Ole Miss. And, you know, you've just been kind of waiting for that light to come on. And it'd be great for Ole Miss fans if, in fact, it did come on this spring. It'd give you a little bit more, sleepful nights over the long summer months as you're waiting for the season to arrive to know that C.J. Hampton is going to be able to be a factor and make an impact playing safety for Ole Miss. All right, turning the page here to the Diamond Rebels, and what a weekend it was, what a week it was for Ole Miss, going 3-1 in four games, taking 2 out of 3 from the previously second-ranked Louisville Cardinals over the weekend. Michael, you were there for it all. Sum it up. How big of a series victory for Ole Miss was this this win over Louisville? And what are things looking like moving forward?
You know, I've heard some in Rebel Nation sort of wondering about Louisville if they were an overrated team or overhyped team. Louisville, from watching them, you know, I was getting there an hour before the game, watching them take BP, watching them fielding, watch how they do their business, and then seeing the talent on the field. Louisville is without a doubt a top five team. They're not going anywhere going forward, and I fully anticipate them to see them in at least a super. And I wouldn't be surprised one bit if they went back to Omaha yet again. This is a really good team with a few no doubt first rounders on the ball club. And seeing Ole Miss, you know, that first game was, Coach Bianco said the team sort of felt like it was handed to them, which you see, I believe Louisville locked in 3 runs. Funkhauser walked 7. But that was also, you have to have a guy who's not throwing strikes, but you also have to lay off those pitches and be patient. And Ole Miss was very patient and got the win and held on once it got a little tight towards the end. And you have to really credit the bullpen on that back end. And then Saturday, that was maybe the worst we've seen a Rebel team play since that just dreadful 10-0 loss at home to Southern Miss a few years ago. But I mean, their errors all over the field. The pitcher for Louisville, he's going to be a first rounder next year, McKay. He's only a sophomore, and is absolutely filthy from the left side, and was really stymieing the lefty bats like a J.B. Woodman. The Rebels still weren't swinging the bats very well. McKay finished with 93 pitches in a complete game shutout. McKay, as a hitter, reached base only one less time than the Rebels did as a team against him. And then you see how they come back down 2-0 early on Sunday. The team's either going to die, or they're really going to, you know, fight and scratch and claw their way back into the game. And by the time they got on the board on Sunday, they had gone 15 innings without scoring against Louisville. And they weren't advancing runners. They weren't having good at-bats. And then all of a sudden you see Olenek single, and you see Cloyd single, and Deshaun single, and then Arrow single. And they just really pieced together a really quality inning. It wasn't living and dying by the long ball of, all right, you have one good swing. They got a lot of good swings. And they really got to Louisville. They got ahead in that game. They got the lead. Then you see a guy like Will Golson, who struggled to start the year. He's put on about 15 pounds. He's made the position switch over to first base. And you haven't really seen him put together at the plate. He had a couple big hits with the bases loaded so far this year. But then he absolutely demolishes the ball out to left, which you love to see that from your two-hole hitter, especially when he's your first baseman. And from there, that bullpen yet again really shut down the Louisville bats. And I said it in the preseason a little bit that Mike Bianco said that this is possibly the deepest bullpen that he's had. And you're seeing a David Parkinson lighten it up from the left side who can give you a few innings. He can give you 2, 3, 4 innings if you need him. Andy Pagnozzi didn't pitch this weekend, but was a highly regarded freshman out of Fayetteville, Arkansas, who has had a tremendous start to the year. Will Stokes, who's touching 95. Dallas Wolfolk comes in a big spot on Saturday and gets him out of it. And he's looked great as well in the mid-90s and is, of course, the heir apparent to Wyatt Short. Once Short either goes to the draft or graduates. And you see, of course, Wyatt Short at the back end, who's just as shut down as it gets. And this win meant so much to a lot of the guys on the team. Wyatt Short told me, this is just another game. This is just another team in our way. But that's just player talk. That's not how this team feels when you get down to it. You saw Sean Johnson, Will Golson, a lot of these guys said, this is a confidence win for us. We know that we can play with anyone in the country. We have Louisville, the number 2 team in the country, coming here. And they took advantage, and they didn't play their best ball, but they took advantage of opportunities on Friday and got the win. They played their worst game of the year on Saturday, and it was still only a 4-run ball game. I mean, 4 runs isn't exactly a nail-biter, but they usually, when you play as poorly as Ole Miss did on Saturday, you get absolutely blown out of the water. And then on Sunday, they just outplayed them. They had more grit. They had good at-bats. They played great defense. You saw at the end with a tremendous double play to end it. And it was such a great team win. And it answered a lot of the questions that we had about this rotation. They're going up against possibly the best rotation in the country with Funkhauser and McKay leading it. And you see Chad Smith, tremendous outing, goes 7-plus. Sean Johnson, 5 1/3, after he gave up the 2 first-inning runs, was shut down from that point forward and just started throwing out zeros. And Brady Bramlett with 8 strikeouts on Friday. You see this team sort of coming together and piecing together and beating a team like Louisville is huge. It's big. And you saw that with the emotion on Sunday when that final out came and Errol Robinson and Tate Blackman were both screaming and then just embraced each other on a side bump. Wyatt Short, I think, might have popped a blood vessel in his temple as he was coming off the mound. And then you saw all the starters from the field going together and meeting in center field and doing a side bump when usually that's just the 3 outfielders. And there's just a ton of emotion here. It was playoff baseball atmosphere, and it was certainly a huge monster series win for Ole Miss.
Well, and you mentioned the Ole Miss pitching staff holding its own with Louisville, and that was a team that had scored 57 runs through 4 ball games coming into this weekend series at Swayze Field. The national media starting to recognize Ole Miss's prowess. Many believe the Rebels were being snubbed in the preseason, left out of most preseason polls. Baseball America poll out today. The Rebels jumped 8 spots, up to number 13 in the Baseball America poll. They're ranked number 15 in the Perfect Game poll and number 17 in D1Baseball.com. Michael, I'll ask you this. A couple of disparaging tweets by national baseball writer Kendall Rogers last weekend. He made a stop in Oxford and watched the Rebels play the Florida International game. Wasn't necessarily impressed with the Ole Miss baseball facilities, and that's kind of a head-scratcher because most around Ole Miss and most of the fan base feel like Ole Miss has some of the best facilities in the nation.
Yeah, it was sort of strange. A lot of folks inside the program were sort of wondering about it, about what was really left to be desired from Oxford University Stadium and Swayze Field. And he left unimpressed. Maybe that's partially because he just came from the opening weekend in Tuscaloosa where you saw tens of millions of dollars in renovations poured into that poured into the new stadium in Tuscaloosa. But yeah, it was sort of strange. He caught some flack on Twitter from Ole Miss fans when he described the Sunday uniforms as Columbia blue, I guess referencing the old Houston Oilers get-ups. But it was definitely a head scratcher for a lot of people, a lot of media folks, a lot inside the program, and he wasn't tremendously impressed with the team as a whole, saying that he's gone on record as saying that he feels like they're still the fifth best team, not in the SEC, but in the SEC West. And, you know, Ole Miss, it's sort of strange that you're seeing them not getting the sort of love in the preseason. Part of that can be due to, you know, what happened in the postseason last year with a pair of bad losses to Maryland, who's not the worst team in the world, but really losing to CSU Bakersfield, that was a big thing. Of course, losing a Sykes Orvis, losing two-thirds of the weekend rotation along with the top midweek guy in Wagasback. And so I guess a lot of folks were saying, hey, Ole Miss didn't have a great year, and they're replacing a few of these guys. But as someone who has been around the program for a couple months and looking at what this team has, and it's really as close to a complete baseball team as Ole Miss has had in a little while. I mean, you have a deep bullpen, you have a deep rotation. You have 1 through 9 that can hit, except maybe there's some question marks with DH, whether that'll be Kyle Watson or DJ Miller or what's going to happen with that DH spot. But tremendous defense. And so, you know, you're going to start seeing the national media come along with Ole Miss here. And as long as they keep winning games, and this past weekend went a long way towards that. And you saw Kendall Rogers and Aaron Fitt put together that D1 poll. The two of them collaborate on that. And you see Ole Miss jump 9 spots today with that big series win. And it says a lot about Louisville that they still kept Louisville in the top 5 after losing a series on the road. And so you're going to start seeing them come around as long as Ole Miss keeps producing. And they'll get another chance to impress this weekend. Ball State and Cincinnati, they're not great teams. Memphis is not a great team. Ole Miss should win those games. If they don't, then you know that'll be a little bit of a blemish on a record. But then again, baseball is a long season. Bad losses tend to be forgot about unless they're series losses. But Coastal Carolina is a very quality team. If Ole Miss can get a win over Coastal Carolina in the round robin field out in South Carolina this weekend, that will certainly go a long way. But as far as Roger's saying things about the team and about the facilities, It was strange, and it wasn't exactly met with a lot of positivity.
Well, for the record, I like Ole Miss's powder blue unis that they've worn the last two Sundays. I think those things are awesome. For me, they carry me back to the 1980s and Major League Baseball, when almost every team that weren't named the Dodgers and the Yankees had a powder blue road uniform. I guess the Oakland A's didn't. There are probably a few more clubs, but a lot of clubs did have the powder blues, and I like that. I think they look really, really good. Not crazy about the hat combination with them. Maybe they could do something with that. But I will say this. Those things that Louisville wore yesterday, with the Houston Astros tops and the red pants, solid red pants, that's one of the wildest-looking baseball uniforms I've ever seen. And I don't know if I like it. I like all the uniform combinations and tossing things in, but they were distracting. I mean, very, very distracting. They make 1978 disco attire look like a pair of jeans and a T-shirt.
Yeah, you know, Mississippi State, I think, had a similar uniform combination a few years back, having that Houston Astro, mid-80s look to them as well. And, it is kind of distracting. I think those colors are pretty bright. But I agree with you, David. I love the powder blues. It does remind me of the late 80 Cardinal uniforms. And the hat, I like the UM. It's different. It's a change. And I think it sticks out.
Well, there you have it. Well, we're 45 minutes into this podcast, and Michael has been attacked by a lion dog. We have talked about Chris Jones flopping out at the NFL Combine, Robert Kimdichie meeting the media there. The Ole Miss baseball team's huge win, series win over Louisville over the weekend. The one thing we haven't talked about yet, I got some lead-in music queued up for this, guys. We got to talk about. Let me just play the lead-in music. You can figure out what we're talking about. That's what that is. And we'll play that in honor of the Rebels NCAA tournament hopes, which pretty much died Saturday on the hardwood in Athens, Georgia. Michael, the only way Ole Miss gets in the NCAA tournament from this point forward is they have to be cutting down nets on a Sunday in Nashville, Tennessee, which, folks, you know, that's not likely to happen. Michael, you know, they've got Mississippi State in the pavilion this week. It's senior night. There will be another game in the pavilion this year, I think. I could see the pavilion hosting its first ever NIT game this year. But, you know, Reed and Tennessee left to go, Michael. What's left to play for?
Yeah, there's the four seed and double bye opportunity. That's now gone. There was not a big hope by any means of Ole Miss getting an at-large before the Georgia game. They would have had to win Georgia, Mississippi State, Tennessee, and get to Sunday in Nashville to really have a shot at an at-large bid. And that's with the bubble sort of weakening, some others falling out. But now with that Georgia loss and how bad that Georgia loss was, there's no chance other than winning in Nashville. So right now what you're looking at, these last two games, obviously beating Mississippi State on senior night and Stephon Moody's last game, Tomas Giello, Martavius Newby, and Anthony Perez's last game, that's sort of big on an emotional scale. And then you look at beating Mississippi State and Tennessee as far as seeding goes, there's a logjam in the middle of the SEC right now. And you want to get on the opposite side of Kentucky, but there's no real way to do that other than just sort of wishful thinking. But they're getting these wins and jockeying for a better position in the SEC tournament will matter as far as going into trying to make a run in Nashville. I'm telling you, this is going to be one of those very strange SEC tournaments that we saw a few years ago when Georgia ran the table, and I believe they were a 14 seed in the NCAA tournament after winning the SEC title, or when Ole Miss won it with Marshall Henderson and they ended up a 12 seed. This is going to be a weird SEC tournament. This isn't going to be a tournament of all the favorites winning, because there's so much parity this year. When Kentucky loses to Auburn, and they're the best team in the SEC right now as far as standings go, as far as the rankings go, and you see Vanderbilt, highly talented team, dropping, having a lot of bad losses, Texas A&M, bad losses, LSU, horrible losses. So it's going to be very strange in Nashville. So Ole Miss is just hoping that strangeness goes their way. So right now they're going to be jockeying for position and also trying to get a big win for those seniors, closing out their Ole Miss careers. And also, like you said, if they lose in the SEC tournament, like, you know, it's very expected that they will not run the table, then, you know, trying to get a home game or two in the pavilion and sort of showing that off on the national scale on ESPN, because when the NCAA tournament games aren't going on, people still sort of want to watch some tournament basketball and may tune into the NIT. And Ole Miss is still getting that exposure. Something that's not really looked at is Ole Miss is still struggling to find non-conference teams to play, to get those home-and-homes and things like that. And a lot of that was due to the Tad Pad and sort of the lack of excitement around Ole Miss basketball. There's really not a lot to gain for another team of coming to play there. So getting a lot of fans into the pavilion, getting those games on ESPN, on ESPN2, and showcasing just how immaculate of a facility the pavilion is, that should help Ole Miss going forward as far as scheduling goes. Because when we've seen this time and time again that Ole Miss gets to this point in the season and they have a record as good or better than a lot of NCAA tournament bubble teams that are considered shoe-ins for the tourney, but Ole Miss isn't on the bubble conversation because their RPI is low, because they're playing the UMasses of the world, the Southeastern Missouri States of the world, the Bradleys of the world. When Ole Miss needs to be stepping up to play more of those Oregons, playing more of those Kansas States, and getting that non-conference slate that's carrying Florida into the tournament with a similar record, that's taking Vanderbilt into the tournament with a similar record. And so you really need that exposure for the Pavilion. And I know it sounds strange that there's a silver line to the NIT, but hosting an NIT game or two would help tenfold for the program going forward, that they can draw the interest of those bigger programs to come to Oxford to play a home and home here, or set something up on the scheduling front. So there is still a lot at stake here, although one thing that is not at stake is an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament.
All right, Dave, let me ask you this. Now, when you're talking about the SEC, obviously the kingpins of college football, you could argue that the SEC is the top conference for college baseball, college softball, women's basketball at one time when Tennessee had its dominant run. But when it comes to men's basketball and the Southeastern Conference, remove Kentucky from the equation, and the SEC is just pitiful in terms of the college basketball conference on a national scene. And why is that? Why can the SEC have the country's greatest football programs, the country's greatest baseball programs, some of the country's greatest softball programs, some of the country's best women's basketball programs, yet when it comes to men's basketball, the SEC is not, even with its millions and millions of dollars in its treasure chest, been able to surge forward in the national basketball conversation as far as the men go? What do you think? Why is that?
I mean, there's several things that you can look at it to try and put a pinpoint on it. The first thing you would obviously have to look at is the recruiting, aspect of it. Are they recruiting at the level as schools as such as in the Big Ten? Even the Big 12 has come strong over the past several years. But there are some quality recruits out there among SEC schools. Two schools that come into mind is LSU and Mississippi State, who had really good recruiting classes this past year, and the expectations heading into this season were high for them. And Mississippi State, obviously out of the picture for NCAA tournament hopes. They're all along the lines with Ole Miss in that picture. And then LSU, they were trying to hang on, there for the last four team out, in the bubble or what have you. And it looks as though that their hopes are dwindling as well. And that's the first thing is I would have to look at it is the recruiting angle of it. SEC recruiting, had they been, going out there and getting those top-rated guys, Kentucky, the Louisvilles, the Kentuckys, that's notably basketball country. And obviously those schools up there have been recruiting at a high level over, the past several years.
I think that's your key right there. I think all recruiting must start at home. You've got to have a base of recruits at home around your university to start building with. And in the South, little boys tend to spend their time growing up either on the baseball diamond or on the football field more so than they do, I think, on the hardwood or on the concrete slab, playing ball out in the park. And maybe that has something to do with it. Michael, am I totally wrong on that?
No, I agree. It's not exactly a strong basketball culture in the South. And it has a lot to do with the weather outside. I mean, you're growing up in Minnesota or Wisconsin, you're going to be indoors a little bit more. But you can be outside playing football, playing baseball, and that's why it's not even close that the better football and baseball players are in the southern region and furthermore into California, into Arizona, into Texas. That's where the better players of those two sports are from. And basketball, it's not as much – it's not as much raw athleticism as baseball. If you have an arm that can go 90 plus, then, yeah, you're going to get a shot taken on. If in football, if you're just big and athletic, then someone's going to take a chance on you if you have good enough measurables. But in basketball, I mean, you see a lot of guys. Do you think J.J. Redick, when you look at him, do you think professional athlete? When you look at Steph Curry, do you look at him and think professional athlete? Of course not. There's a lot that goes into basketball, and just the instruction isn't there on the AAU level. It's not there on the high school level. And so you're getting a lot of unfinished products going in. And when you have those, you know, those 6'11 guys who, just because they're 6'11, they're going to get looks, they're going elsewhere. Because do they want to go to Alabama where no one's in the stands, or Auburn where there's nowhere in the stands? They want to go to Ole Miss where, you know, unless the team is really good, no one's really showing up to pack the house. Meanwhile, Indiana, they're bad, it's sold out. Indiana, they're good, it's sold out. And so there's the culture there that goes into the fan bases, and then also goes into the coaching levels on the lower ranks. That sort of, you know, it's not exactly a recipe for success.
You know,
yeah, that's a great point.
It's hard to find these major college programs that are successful. And, you know, Kentucky's looked at as a basketball school, obviously. Indiana's looked at as a basketball school. Neither can seem to really get their football program to catch on fire. I guess inside the SEC, the exception would be Florida. Traditionally has had both good football and good basketball. I don't think you could really say that for anybody else inside the SEC. I mean, LSU flashes in basketball every now and then. Alabama, certainly, it's a football school. Auburn is a football school. Ole Miss is a football school. Kentucky, of course, a basketball school, as we mentioned, and they've tried to pour money into their facilities with their coaching staff to be able to get football to surge at Kentucky, and they're not able to do it. And that's just an interesting dynamic. But guys, who am I missing here? I mean, as far as, I guess, Texas A&M could be considered having success on the football field and the basketball court, but nothing to any kind of exceptional standard or consistent standard. I mean, outside of the Florida Gators, who's been able to do it inside the SEC in terms of football and basketball, Michael, consistently?
I think that's about it as far as consistency goes. You see Tennessee has flashes in basketball every now and again, going back to Bernard King. Arkansas has flashes. They used to be a power under Nolan Richardson in basketball, but their football team's not exactly very consistent. Went to the Sugar Bowl the other year. But I think Florida's the only one who's really year in and year out has a threat in both basketball and football to go pretty deep.
Yeah, the Gators are a pretty good baseball program as well, an outstanding athletic program at the University of Florida. And you know, you look at the one here in Oxford at Ole Miss, and an outstanding athletic program as well. I mean, a football team, a program now that is generally considered amongst most as a top 15 program in the country. I think you could say the same thing for the Ole Miss baseball program. Basketball program consistently wins at a middle level. 20 wins is the expectation in Oxford as far as basketball goes. And, will the new arena increase those expectations? Absolutely it will. You keep bumping your head on the same ceiling. You're either going to knock a hole through that ceiling, or you're going to fall back down to the floor. So I don't know what that means exactly, but I do know that with the new arena, the new investment in men's basketball and women's basketball, the expectations will not stay the same. They will certainly rise, and it's been a really wicked tough year for the Ole Miss women's basketball program. And that's disappointing to see, as it looked like Coach Matt Insel was had them on the right track. And it's going to be important that they turn things around quickly as early as next year, I believe, particularly with some possible sanctions coming down and everything on the program. That's something to watch right there, I think, as they have really, really struggled this year and taken multiple steps backwards from where Pensel had them at one point early in his tenure in Oxford. Okay, guys, time for closing thoughts. Dave, we'll throw it to you. What's on your mind?
Well, there's definitely a lot of excitement to be building around the Ole Miss baseball team, and rightfully so. I mean, they're coming out of the weekend knocking off the number two team in the country. And what you know, I've said it in past podcasts, to determine a good team, you know, in a baseball team is you know, how, you know, versatile they can be throughout, you know, getting wins. And you've seen it through the course of the season. You know, Ole Miss is – opened up the season with a dominating weekend over FIU. Then they had to turn around and come from behind, you know, to beat Arkansas State in a walk-off fashion. And then they go into Louisville, and then they had to hold on for, you know, wins against Louisville, coming from behind to win on Sunday. So you're seeing, you know, different flavors of ways this team can win, and that's very important, you know, heading into a tough schedule. I know a lot of Ole Miss fans look back at last weekend like, whew, that was a great win, but glad we got that tough team out of the way. You know, not so fast because, you know, Ole Miss's schedule, it's not going to be easy peasy here on out. And they've got the, you know, one of the top five hardest schedules in the country according to the RPI rankings. And, you know, they got LSU coming up. Michael mentioned Coastal Carolina. That's a good opponent coming up this weekend. So, and then, you know, going down the middle of the stretch, got a road matchup against Mississippi State. And so they got some tough stretches down the road, and, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they maintain that consistency, you know, here on out. And as we mentioned, basketball, you know, you look at this upcoming senior night, as Michael pointed out, the looking good for out of something to come out of this season would not to be, you know, getting swept by Mississippi State, you know, in the basketball season. So, know that a lot of Ole Miss fans are hoping for that, you know, not to get swept by your in-state rival. And then spring ball is just right around the corner. So, you know, a lot of expectations coming in for this 2016 Ole Miss football team, a lot to be exciting about. And we'll have all the coverage for you at Rebel 247.
All right, Michael, closing thoughts.
Yeah, I'd just like to. I believe I've used this before, but I'd like to go back to the old well again to say, you know, things are going well at Ole Miss. The basketball season, of course, had an unfortunate turn, but baseball is looking up. Football is looking up. Football recruiting is looking up. And let's try and keep all the focus on Ole Miss. Rather than, you know, sometimes we can have a little bit of twisted joy in seeing some bad things going on at some rival schools or fellow conference schools or things like that. But I just encourage everyone to, you know, instead of looking at the negative outside your window, look around and see all the good that's going on with the Ole Miss programs and Ole Miss athletic department. And it's a really good time, especially if you like baseball, because There's a bandwagon to jump on. If you want to get full on board with anything, this baseball team looks damn good, and going forward should be a real fun watch.
Well, there's Michael Quirk's Bernie Sanders kumbaya moment for this podcast. I like it. Makes me want to go buy a Coke and share it with the world. Super Tuesday
exactly. Tomorrow,
guys. Michael, I know you're going to Kroger tonight to get nacho supplies and some sausages for the grill and all that good stuff to be able to partake in Super Tuesday via the National News Network tomorrow, a big day in the history of America.
Yeah, it's going to be terrifying. I get more and more worried every day as Trump looks to be stronger and stronger to get the nomination. I get I feel like I may just be dying a little inside every time I see something in the news that looks like he is going to be the next president.
I think it's in the cards. You know, he's Teflon. Nothing he does is stymieing his momentum whatsoever. The only thing I know that could possibly derail Donald Trump at this moment is while he's walking to the podium tomorrow night, He flops and does a Chris Jones, but I'm not even sure that would even change the way things are going at this moment. And there I went and spoiled Michael's kumbaya wishes, and I do apologize for that. But that's not a bad thing. It happens. Life happens, and life happened to Chris Jones at the NFL Combine on Sunday. Well, we're going to wrap it up before we get in trouble here on this edition of the Rebel Rise Live podcast. From my good buddies, Dave Bevan and Michael Quirk, I'm David Johnson, and I'm not responsible for the content of this podcast. See you next time. Hotty toddy.